the world leader in Internet Talk Radio. Internet Talk Radio. You're listening to America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
Hey, 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 you are. You're listening to Waking Up in America. We're a radio magazine for an intelligent world. So come be a fly on the wall with us and listen to some of the most intriguing conversations in radio. And you can get it only here on Waking Up in America. Our experts in this premier radio magazine are Cherie Ross. She does the incorporating essential oils into your daily life. We have Maureen O'Crean, our resident diva, who will keep you informed of the diva do's and don'ts in a colorful and delightful way. And Lisa is all about families and all about families being responsible in our lives. And she's going to be dropping in today. I don't remember what part of the country she has migrated to. I have a very exciting group of people here that change locations with great ease. We have Debbie Ringchop. She'll give you new ways of igniting a financial future for yourself and your family. And Debbie's all about saving your retirement. And believe me, that sounds like a good thing to do. Keep your fingers crossed. George Rucheski is going through a questionable sell zone, which he's going to have to demonstrate great areas of leadership just to get into the call today, and we're hoping that he will make it. But just know that about George. And what can I tell you? I've been in Rome. I've been at the Nobel Laureates Conference. The interview today is going to be with Jean Houston. I called her from Rome, and Pete actually patched us together. But for those of you who have been with us for a while, you know that the first Wednesday of the month, we have Patty Cota Robles from One Era of Peace. And Patty, I think you're such a great way to start the month, Patty. Yeah, you're an author, you're a retired marriage, family, child counselor, and you are now a world traveler, it would seem, too. And you have an amazing organization and tapes that are profound, and I'm pleased to have you here with us today.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So you and I were discussing that it was Pearl Harbor Day today.
Yes, it is Pearl Harbor Day, and I know that you're going to be talking about a lot of really challenging things that are going on the planet in this segment, and we need to focus on certainly getting in touch and taking action on a physical level to make some changes and shift the things that are taking place. And in addition to that, there are tremendous waves of light that are pouring into the planet that can help us accelerate and enhance our ability to be effective. You know, we're really becoming aware of the fact through all levels that we have this collective consciousness, and where our attention is, there we are. And in December, there's some really important times that we have the ability to increase the energies that we need to motivate us to take the action to change the things that are going on. One of the influxes of light, in addition to the fact that the 7th of December, that people are focusing on Pearl Harbor, and hopefully instead of the horror of that, focusing on transcending it and bringing peace and shifting what's taking place so those kinds of things don't happen again. On the 8th of December, which is tomorrow, it's celebrated in the outer world as the Immaculate Conception, the Day of the Immaculate Conception, which was the conception of Mother Mary, which was reflecting the Divine Mother, and her birthday is celebrated in the outer world on September 8th, 9 months later. And we've often thought of the Immaculate Conception as Jesus' conception, but that's actually the Miraculous Conception. And the Immaculate Conception was a reflection that the Divine Feminine, the Divine Mother, the reverence of life within us, came into the physical plane without original sin, or as we say it in more modern terminologies, karma-free. And so that day, focusing on that, bringing in what the Divine Mother represents is reverence for life, which conflicts with everything that's going on in the outer world that we see happening and the things that you're going to be talking about. But the reverence for life, the understanding that all life is interrelated, that one part of life suffering on this planet affects all life suffering on the planet. So December 8th is a time when we can just open up to that divine flow of love and light from the Divine Mother and project it anywhere we want to on the planet, into Africa and all the places that you're going to be talking about. December 12th is another day that's also celebrating the Divine Feminine, the Divine Mother, the love nature of God, which is the celebration of the Virgin of Guadalupe. And those 2 days are coming up really quickly, and times when we can just offer ourselves as an instrument to let this light flow through us. Then, of course, there's all the spiritual and religious holidays, which are open doors for more influx of light, as well as the winter solstice, the 21st of December, which is a powerful time of light as well. So in December, in order to be an instrument, the whole company of heaven cannot interfere with our free will. But if we open ourselves up and just ask to be an instrument of God, the floodgates of heaven open, and all of these portals of light, all of these opportunities and these focuses of our attention for reverence for life create this open portal of light through which the company of heaven can pour additional light. What this light does, it awakens our heart flames, and then more and more people on the planet will start understanding that we're all in this together, and they'll start focusing on the viable solutions for the challenges that are taking place in the outer world, and the things you're going to be talking about, and the opportunities of people coming together. We have to identify what's wrong, but we need to not just wring our hands and get down in the negativity and think that the earth is going to hell in a handbasket. We have to say, okay, yes, these things are going on, but what do we want instead of that? And start focusing on what we can do collectively as a family of humanity to turn things around.
So, Patty.
Yes.
One of the great parts about this conference in Europe was the fact that certain countries in Europe are actually tithing to Africa.
Yes.
So it isn't about what's wrong. It's about how do we take care of what's happening here. And it's not all about sending money or giving gifts. It's actually about getting Africans to be able to take care of themselves because they have a place in the free market, which is something we've taken away. We've basically used Africa since the early 1900s for our own means. And now we have to stop using and start giving back some of what we've taken. And it's going to happen here. It's like the whole world is beginning to see things differently, which will show up in the conversation with Jean Houston. And I just really appreciate you creating those markers for us.
Well, thank you. It's an exciting time, and we just need to stay focused. And the most important thing is to remember where our attention is, there we are. So we need to say, at this moment, is what I'm thinking adding to the light of the world, or am I adding to the shadow?
Exactly. You know, are we scissors, or are we thread?
Right, exactly.
So am I cutting something up, or am I putting something together here? Is a good thing to ask yourself. And we can ask that in our local communities. We can ask that as we greet a neighbor. You know, I'm going around lately wanting to make sure that when people see me, they smile as much as possible.
Good.
That's a goal I have.
That's wonderful. And the thing is, what we need to really understand is that it doesn't matter how grandiose our efforts are. All life is interrelated, and if we're just working to get our own lives in order, we're creating this upward rush that's lifting up the rest of life as well. But what happens is, once we start really doing that, then we see the bigger picture, and then we feel this incredible heart call to take greater levels of action and work on a larger scale in our own families, in our communities, and on our planet.
Well, that's so great, and I really want to thank you for being with us today. And you'll be back next month, won't you?
Yes, I sure will. Thank you.
That is wonderful. Patty, thank you so much. Do you want to send them to your website or anything?
Well, they're certainly welcome to. It's onespirit.com, and then /era of peace. ERAOFPEACE. They're welcome to go to the website.
It sounds absolutely perfect. And I'm wondering, Ruben, if you would. I called Jean Houston from Rome and said I need to talk to somebody about what's been going on over here before I lose all the energy of it. And Jean very generously put together a conversation with us. So we'd like to play that, Ruben, if you would put on Jean Houston and Val from Rome.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and I'm calling in from Rome. I have just completed attending the Nobel Laureates Conference that was held here over the Thanksgiving holidays. And this is Peace Laureates, of course, and I actually had the privilege of meeting six of the Peace Laureates in person. They're remarkable human beings. And I had attended, shortly before coming here, Dr. Jean Houston's course on mastery. I'm not sure what kind of mastery you would call it, Jean, but it was certainly a mastery for me.
Mystery school is what it was.
Well, mystery school makes it sound
but it was
more mysterious than I think than it actually is.
It was exploring. Well, mystery school is very serious because there have been mystery schools for thousands of years that help people discover who and what they really are, what their deepest purpose in life is, and to do so with an extraordinary array of processes and discoveries about themselves, high creativity. And, of course, our mystery school is about to begin again in 2006.
Well, in terms of what I was referring to, Jean, I almost see it more of a mastery school. Learning how to master oneself and how to bring forth in oneself one's greatest potential. And there were a number of brilliant processes that you took us through. And during one of those processes, I mentioned that I was going to Rome for the Nobel Laureates Conference, and you mentioned your book, Manual for the Peacemaker.
Yes.
And an Iroquois legend to heal self and society. And so I had this in my hand as I came to Rome, and I'm wondering if you could tell our listeners what has happened since you've written that book and how has it affected people?
Well, the book has gone out all over the world. It was actually on the shelves of the last administration because it really gives the principles drawn from the tremendous story of the great peacemaker, Daganoweda, who lived probably somewhere between the 11th and 16th century, and how he brought a new peace by bringing a new mind, a new consciousness to the Indians of the eastern woodlands of the United States, the Iroquois people. And, of course, and so what I did is tell the story and then create, as I do, evocative processes that help us bring new mind, new passion, new social conscience, weaving the story into the story of our lives. Because there's no question that we are at not only the most interesting time in human history, but the most dangerous, you know. And, you know, we are a very fortunate group of people, Val, because we have a reason for being on Earth in this incredibly open moment of the planet's history, I mean, these early years of the millennium. Our job, our holy task, our great privilege is to help bring about a peace, a society that is so rich and full of flavor that it makes sense to make peace and to shift the dangerous and the fearful war-embracing patterns of the centuries and to offer a rich and evocative alternative. And this is what I try to do around the world now as the UN special consultant on human development, bringing powerful processes to new leaders around the world in my role in developing countries to bring about not just peace but great new societies. You know, many years ago, on a very late night program, I said that the concepts of peace that most of us grew up with are too tame. The peace should be alluring, fascinating, challenging. In a word, peace should be sexy. And several days later, Clifford Browder, an elderly poet, he said, well, I was very interested in what you said about making peace sexy, so I wrote you the poem. And I'm going to give you the poem. This is a tremendous poem. I also put it in my book, Manual of the Peacemaker. Peace is not sterile gauze, a snowflake, an insipid dove. It's feisty and rich. Don't let the war boys hog it all, the spit, the spice, and the glamour. Peace is potency, reaching and sprouting, budding and branching. It's lifting things. A good scrap, a hot wrestle, and a cool scrub, cleansing and hope. Peace is the empowerment of dust. Whispers of the song before origin is out of seed. The cathedral of the body builds itself. It's spasms and metamorphoses. The vertigo of mind dancing with the fecundator to the music of need. Pieces, little orange bees, spotted ladybugs on white campions. Late June with a stink of linden, prickles and burrs. It's wild grapes in a bramble, a tough nut. Lovers churning through the night, at noon, in the morning. A juicy comeuppance for the grim suppressors. Peace is for the star biters and the rooted. Don't be dainty. Go at it, hammer and tongue. Peace is not purity, limp, neat, and dry. It's sexy. So you see, Val, it's a dynamic, green-growing, sap-rising concept, this peacemaking. And when it works, it renews both individuals and communities. And that's why the world...
Which, of course, is why I called you.
Yeah, the world desperately needs, at this time, is patterns for peaceful, passionately creative and effective societies, and with it, peaceful, passionately creative and effective people. And that's what we're trying to do around the world.
So how do we take these figures that I got at the conference, Jane, because I was horrified?
Yes.
How do we take the 30 million dead of hunger in Africa?
Yes.
How do we take the fact that they die of AIDS because they're poor? And I'm not sure. I think it was Jonathan Granoff who said, we live in a broken world that has never been healthier or wealthier. How do we handle all that's going on and dance in that illusion when I'm struck by the horror of what I'm listening
okay.
to?
I'm going to also suggest to you that is all true, but there is being released now, and you can get it on the Internet, the Human Security Report, which also offers a rare message of hope. And drawing on research from around the world, this incredible, immensely complex study, which I just finished reading this morning, shows that over the past 30 years, the collapse of some 60 dictatorships has freed countless millions of people from repressive rule. The numbers of democracies has soared. The interstate wars have become very rare. Wars, believe it or not, have become less deadly. Since the 1992, the number of civil wars has declined. And it's not just, as they say in the report, it's not just that wars are in decline, notwithstanding Rwanda, Srebrenica, and Darfur. The number of genocides and other mass killings is dramatically down worldwide. The fact that the world is getting less warlike is good news for the developing world. And the fact that peace and development, now this is my big point, peace and development are two sides of the same coin. When you have development, and this is what we're working for, where you're working for developments, where you help bring democracy, where you help bring trade, where you help bring people growing in body, mind, and spirit. This brings security. This is something else. And what we're trying to do, especially with the Millennium Development Goals, is to help build inclusive democracies, bring women up to full partnership with men in the whole domain of human affairs, because with women, war is terrible. Women want to see process rather than product. They want to see things cohere and develop and grow. And this is what we're doing. And so what we are having with the dramatic UN-led post-Cold War peacekeeping, peace-building, conflict prevention, nobody's writing about this, but it is tremendous what these diplomatic and UN-led strategies are doing. And what is happening is that these are extraordinary changes in human security, where we put people over states, reconciliation over revenge, diplomacy over deterrence, and people working together. Now, it's true that, as you heard, hundreds of millions of people live in countries that are wracked by violence and poverty. Several billion people live under $2 a day. And we have to begin to work
Jane,
with them. Yes.
Let me give you the newest figure.
Yeah.
They pay $2.50 to support cows, and it's $1 a day for the people in Africa.
No question. $1 a day. And Africa is in the worst state of any state in the world, of any country in the world. That is where violence is at its greatest. Now, let me also say there are so many peace initiatives. Let me just give you one of them. The Carter Center. You know, Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, who have got to be among the greatest and finest human beings on earth. You know, and I had a little bit to do with working with them, but the Carter Center has a peace organization that is making peace around the world. And its record of achievement in peacemaking gives credibility. I mean, go to the CarterCenter.org and find out all the things that can be done. Look at Denis Kucinich's website. Go to some of the recent work of Marianne Williams. I mean, all over the world. There are now 2.5 million organizations that are working around the world for peace, for better economic and environmental sustainability.
Well, that's a
That's for all the good things like that are happening. Now, this is something naturally at your meeting, what was focused was the negative. But I'm also going to say that it is balanced not only by the positive, it is also powerfully balanced by the fact that for the first time in human history, people are deeply, deeply aware because of television, because of the Internet, because of shows like the ones you put on. They are deeply aware of initiatives that they can take, and the initiatives are enormous. We cannot live, you know, as encapsulated bags of skin dragging around dreary little egos. We are part of an environment that is at the biggest shift and change in human history. What we do profoundly makes a difference as to whether we grow or die.
Can I just step in here for a moment?
Please.
Robert Kennedy Jr., who I thought spoke brilliantly as well as Kerry Kennedy, said that we in the United States no longer have a functioning democracy. Now, I sat and I listened to country after country after country get up and say that we were, that all Americans wanted to do was suppress human beings, all that we wanted to do was dominate the world and take over. And Robert Kennedy made the point that we had not, that that was not who we were, that this was not an elected president. When George Bush said you're either for us or against us, they have now decided to be against us, and they've stepped over that line. So at the end of the conference, I introduced myself as an American journalist and explained that George Bush did not represent all Americans and that we weren't interested in suppressing the world and things of that nature, but we're U.S. citizens, and that we're, that Robert Kennedy says we're no longer in a democracy.
Yes.
And the world is pretty much decided to line up against us based on George Bush's challenge.
Yes.
How do we as Americans create peace inside of this, and where do we go, and how do we operate inside of this structure?
Yes. You know, as somebody who travels all over the world really rather frequently, I have found that, yes, America has been demythologized in the eyes and minds of many, many people. Not everybody by any means, but certainly in a substantive group. And in the, then as a student of history, I realized that cultures always have their time of rise, of efflorescence, of decline and collapse. Now, that doesn't mean they don't rise again. But I think that what is happening, and in some sense it's almost healthy, is that with the demythologizing of America as the great hope of the world, what I am finding, and nobody's writing about this, very exciting though, is that many, many cultures are gaining their own authentic power, their own authentic sense of their excellence, their genius, because they don't feel dependent on America anymore. And maybe this is part of the world story. Because if we are going to survive as a species, it's going to be essential in the next century that we move to a kind of world civilization with high individuation of culture. That doesn't mean necessarily a world government, but it means countries in much greater interdependence without being dominated by a single, a particular culture. And this may be part of the world agenda. It may be that, that America had to decline in the minds and hearts of people for a time so that more cultures could bring their genius, their importance, their passion, their possibility, their richness, their diversity into the world pattern. And that's what I ultimately believe that that is happening. At the same time, you know, many Americans are profoundly embarrassed by the present regime, and I think that by 2008, I mean, it certainly is imploding on itself as regimes that become narrow and self-focused and almost narcissistic always do. But at the same time, this has engendered, just goes with the Internet, goes with the major papers, this has engendered tremendous reflection and dialogue on who we were, what we are now, what we yet can be. And I personally believe that we're going to come through this. We are experiencing what other nations have experienced, and we are experiencing it in a very, very public manner. But I believe that this is forcing many, many people to reflect at depths of understanding, of reflection on the nature of the American experiment that is, I think, going to bring us to essentially a renewal. But not a renewal as a dominator culture, but a renewal as a co-creative culture with all the cultures of the world.
That's what I needed to hear, Jean. I just, you know, it just gets so oppressive, and you need hope. When you listen to, when you stand in a pool of people who don't respect you at all,
mm-hmm.
They don't respect you because you represent something to them that isn't even true.
Yes, but you got up. I mean, tell what you did. You got up and you spoke for the rest of the...
I did.
The 60% and rising other Americans. And the great Betty Williams, who's an old friend of mine, you know, who helped to bring peace in Ireland during a terrible time. And she came up to you, and she said what? To say what she said.
Well, let me tell you what happened. I actually spoke to the Assembly of Nobel Laureates when they gave the press a chance to speak. And I told them that as an American journalist, radio journalist, that and a radio show producer, and then I told them that I had been producing for 20 years, I told them that that our media was under the control of the six men who run the media in the U.S., and I quoted Robert Kennedy, and I referred back to him. And also, based on how they knew us, how they spoke of us, I was ashamed to be an American, and that our president does not represent all Americans. And I said that Americans themselves had been misled and deceived by those in charge, and that our elections were not free, and that we had many individuals and organizations that were working for peace. And I actually mentioned you, because I held on to your vision as I was going through this, because it was a difficult journey for me. Afterwards, Betty Williams came up and told me that she could see that things were beginning to change, and she gave me her telephone number in case my depression became too great.
Yes.
She invited me to come to Ireland. So,
but let me also say something. I would not say ashamed to be an American. I'm very proud to be an American. I may be very doubtful about the present regime, but that's not America. That's not America. As I travel America and I see the level of volunteerism, I see the way that people reaching out in many, many organizations, institutions, families to others. I mean, it's the families that took in the families during the Katrina disaster, isn't it?
Yes.
When I see the level of heartfulness, of welcome, of hospitality, of trying to make a difference, you know, when you get to the real America, it is nothing to be ashamed of.
I would have to agree with you. At that moment, it was what I was feeling, and and that's what I expressed. And actually, I had about four or five members of the foreign press come and thank me because it changed their point of view. And as I was telling you when we were talking earlier, perhaps it was my whole journey to go over there and be truthful about my feelings as I listened to the world view of us.
Yes.
And ask them to, you know, to understand that it wasn't us and to give us a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you did a fine and noble thing, and I think you turned a lot of people around, and that's wonderful.
Jonathan gave me a thumb up. Jonathan Granoff gave me a thumbs up, and I appreciate that, because what I was feeling was very true in the moment. I had been listening to it for 3 days.
Sure.
I want to know that we've been talking to Jean Houston. She's a philosopher. She's a master teacher. And how many books have you written?
Well, I've written 20 published ones, but I have 194 unpublished 400-page manuscripts sitting in my library. You know, in the Mystery School and in the Social Artistry Program, I write a small book every month. And so by the time it's delivered, it's about 400 pages when it's typed out.
You're
amazing. But if they're interested in looking at our programs, just go to my website, Jean Houston, one word, JeanHouston. .org, JeanHouston.org.
Well, you know, I did get Robert Kennedy agreed to be on Waking Up in America. So
that's wonderful.
We'll be able to get from his own point of view and his work, you know, the details.
He has a new book, by the way, as you know.
No, I actually didn't.
Yeah, brand new book about these things.
Well, this is pretty terrific, and thank you. I know what you came through to be on the show today, and here it is. It's raining again in Rome.
It's raining here in Ashland, Oregon.
So we're united by rain. Perhaps it's
tears of God.
The tears of God cleansing the possibility.
That's right.
Jean Houston, bless you.
God bless
you. Thank you for being with us.
Yes. Tanta bella cose, as we say in Rome. So many beautiful things.
Grazie, grazie.
Prego, prego.
Arrivederci, Jean.
Arrivederci.
Oh, I love this woman.
I absolutely love this woman. Jean Houston actually had pneumonia and did all that she could to be on the radio show. And as you saw, that was Pete's work. He actually patched together two or three conversations that we had, and you can see that there was a lot of interference. At the same time, what isn't it amazing to hear what Jean Houston has to say about that world? And if you take a check into her book on peacemaking, it's actually all about living the impossible dream. And the particular Indian that she referenced, how he moved through the world was with a stone canoe, a white stone canoe, so that when he came up in his white stone canoe and people saw that a stone canoe was floating, they were willing to listen to him because they knew that the ordinary rules didn't apply. So one of the things that we're asking ourselves and our listeners is, for each one of us, what would be an impossible dream? What would be our stone canoe that if we did that dream and we moved through the world, that we would actually, people would have to stop because they would know we were up to something, you know, that we were having a stone canoe. I'm curious, Lisa Molson, are you here? Miss Family Matters? No, we don't have Lisa. or do we? I hear something. Okay, next online would be, if you would play the tape, Ruben, on Cherie Ross. Cherie Ross is actually on assignment in Las Vegas, and we actually have her conversation recorded for you so that you don't miss a moment of the conversation of essential oils.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Essentially Yours, and this is Cherie Ross. And today, being that it is the beginning of December, we are going to be talking about ways to keep yourselves and those you work with and your friends and those you love uplifted through this stressful holiday time, which is intended to be a very joyful time. So the first oil blend we're going to talk about today is called Christmas Spirit. It is a blend of spruce oil and cinnamon and orange. Now, in addition to emotionally, physiologically working with your brain to keep yourself in more of a happy place or a place of feeling supported and a place of feeling energetic, it also is very grounding so that the stress of the pressure of the added events going on this time of year do not pull you down or uproot you, if you will. And spruce is very well known to attract the frequency of prosperity. Cinnamon bark is a wonderful essential oil. Why? Because it's one of the most powerful antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal oils. So that by you just either diffusing it into the air or wearing it on your body, you will keep yourself strong and protected from these viruses that when we get run down or overstressed, we tend to open the doors to for ourselves. And then orange oil is absolutely spectacular for helping to feel happy and helping to feel calm. It's also very, very good for anyone with skin concerns. And sometimes as we get stressed, we show it up in our faces and our skin. And with the demands of, with more time being demanded on us than what we have to give. And so orange oil will help with that as well. And that's Christmas Spirit, and it's very, very easy to diffuse it. It's in the air. It's also wonderful to just wear it topically. Now, another oil that is wonderful to use, and you can put this in water and drink, is called Citrus Fresh. Anyone who, you know, if you're on the in any of the coasts, the west or the east coast, specifically the south, you don't have the problem what's called SADS, Seasonal Affective Disorder Syndrome. But SADS affects a lot of people as we turn the corner and move into winter, where they feel their moods dropping, and they feel themselves becoming irritable, becoming very listless, and hard to stay motivated without the sun. Citrus Fresh Oil actually works with that midbrain, the portion of the middle of the brain that determines and monitors that feeling in us. And when you drink Citrus Fresh Oil, or again, you can diffuse it or topically, but this one especially is helpful to drink it. When you drink it, it literally helps you to feel like it's a sunny day every single day you're drinking it. What does it contain? Orange and tangerine, lemon, mandarin, grapefruit, and spearmint. Now, in addition to this wonderful, what it does for emotionally, it helps your body to digest unwanted fat, and helps to keep viruses out of your body. So, again, as we move into the holiday season, we tend to eat things we normally don't eat during the rest of the year. The citrus fresh oil will be very, very wonderful in putting it one drop per 8 ounces of water, just drinking it down, and you're going to find that your body is functioning healthily, your moods are uplifted, and you're going to help to get rid of some of that unwanted body fat. So if you'd like to learn more about these wonderful essential oils, please call us at toll-free 866-RADIO-99 or heavenincorporatedallspelledout.com, or you can contact me at www.young-living.net.
And there you go. And while you're over there at the website, please notice that we have a place for you to sign up, and when you sign up, you can get, we'll send out a notice every week of who's going to be on, so you'd know about Gene Houston, and you could let your friends know, or you could let them know that next week David Horowitz is going to be on. We also use that list when you sign up on it to create a monthly drawing where we give away something from one of our editors. So, hey, it's valuable, what can I tell you, all the way around. So why don't you hop on over there? You can go to wakingupinamerica.com and just fill out that little form for us. It's also a great way for you to send questions or comments to us. We love to receive them. And we have presents for you, and we'll give them away the week after Christmas. So there you go. You're going to be getting all those other Christmas presents, but the week after Christmas, there'll be some other presents for you, so it won't all be over then. And next in line, and we don't know if we have him or not, is George Rucheski, because this is the great cell phone conversation. Will he or won't he be able to make it? George, are you there? George Rucheski.
Val, it's Gail. I just wanted to say that you're the gift, and thank you so much for everything you're doing, and welcome home.
Oh, thank you very much. It's so wonderful to have you pop right in here and listening. Is there anything you'd care to say, Gail? This is Gail Ellen, our person in charge of international protocol.
You know, I just want to say that George carried the torch for you very well while you were gone.
And I heard that he did a fabulous job.
He did, and we were just so anxious to hear from you when you landed your feet again on U.S. soil.
Oh, yes, I still haven't got my bags yet.
Oh, I'm sure not.
I got my bags lost. I thought, you know, I have to tell you, Gail, the most well-run country as far as I can tell so far,
mm-hmm.
it's the Netherlands.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that made it run so well that you liked?
Well, first of all, it's an extremely clean country.
Uh-huh.
Second of all, there's hardly any old age there because everybody's so healthy. They ride a lot of bicycles.
Oh.
Third of all, that Dutch cleanliness has something to do with when you take a look at the airport, everything just runs really well. You can have your baggage stored in lockers. You can do all kinds of things, and the whole thing runs very smoothly. The Dutch have been automated since I visited them in the back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the 70s, they had dispensers for anything from books to contraceptives. It was just amazing.
Wow.
Flowers, sandwiches.
Wow.
They were all in dispensers, and you could get them on a street corner, and this is the 1970s. What they actually do there is they probably have the world's best, quotes, drug program, which is they actually have shops in Amsterdam where people can go and they can get themselves, they can smoke something if they want to in that shop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they don't go out on the street and do it. You don't find people lying around on the streets.
Right.
Amsterdam. There's the evaluation of how they run things is considered the best in the world because they have this program that allows people to use some marijuana if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They have lower incidences of HIV positive, and they have lower incidences of alcoholism and all those other things. So it's just really interesting to look at it and to see the vibrancy of the people. And if you've seen Dutch staircases in the old buildings, you know why everybody's so strong.
Oh, because they have
straight
to
up.
Stairs.
They're like mountain goats. You have to be a mountain goat to be Dutch. So I just kept looking around the city, and I just was amazed at what I saw. The museums are extraordinary. There's actually in the in the Van Gogh Museum, there's actually this lobby space in the downstairs lobby in which you sit down on these blue couches and chairs. And I remember at the time thinking, isn't that interesting, because blue disappears on film, right? So I go upstairs, and I'm in, like, the second and third balcony, and all of a sudden I notice that there's these images projected on the walls, and they're paintings of which the people that are sitting on the chairs in the lobby have become part of the paintings without knowing it.
For heaven.
So they're actually living paintings happening, people are going in and out, and they have, like, five different scenes, and because of the blue chairs, you can't see the chairs.
Like the living
it's
art.
It's so brilliantly clever. Things, they're just a preciseness, and there's a, you just get the sense that they're together, that they love their history, that they've had their problems, and that they just keep working things out.
Sounds like they're happy people.
They do, and they even have a tour of the Red Light District. You could actually get a bus ride on Friday nights and go down and take a tour bus through the Red Light District, because they don't hold it the way we hold it.
Right.
It's just a different place that where people take care of what they're up to. So I just loved it, and you know, and then I picked out it two times at the London Theater the next day. Went to see Andrew Lloyd Webber's Woman in White, and also The Producers, and they're great shows, Gail.
I heard The Producers is unbelievably
yes, it is
extraordinary.
And the English remember what style is. So you sit in the dress circle, or you sit in the stalls.
Oh yes.
And there's cocktails in between, if you
yes.
so wish. And
yes.
everybody's dressed up pretty nicely.
Yes.
You can still be casual. So it was an extraordinary adventure, and you know, I'll be happy to tell you and the listeners much more about it later. But I actually want to bring Debbie Rimchop in, because Debbie Rimchop is going to actually rescue us from our retirement issues, Gail.
Well, get her on.
I said get her on immediately in the next 7 minutes of yours, Deb.
Great, thank you. Well, I'm going to start off by saying, if you were playing in a golf tournament, would you rather have Tiger Woods' swing or his clubs? It would be to your advantage to focus first on your swing, then you can tweak your game by focusing on the best instruments. Up to this point, I have focused primarily on the swing or the strategies and methods for wealth enhancement. And the best or financial instruments for wealth accumulation is to choose the right investments. Last week I talked about the three simple tests for serious cash. You look at the investments from the liquidity point. Is it liquid? Second is safety. Is it safe? And the third is the rate of return. With the types of things for the three tests actually pass on, there's like 16 different categories of investments available. Only three categories actually pass all three of those tests, and that's annuities, investment-grade life insurance contracts, and some mutual funds. Most annuities are simply savings accounts with insurance companies that accumulate money on a tax-deferred basis. That means it's paid out LIFO, last in, first out. The last money you earn, i.e. your interest, is treated as the first money you're withdrawing. So you have to pay tax on that. Regular annuities don't blossom in value when you die. You're just basically taking the money out and earning as you go. Home equity definitely should not be invested in securities such as mutual funds or variable annuities or even variable life insurance products either. So when we talked last week about taking money out of your home and investing it, you just don't want to put it in something that's variable, that has the potential of losing the principal that you start with. Okay. Now, while the market generally goes up over the long run, there's a lot of ups and downs in the short run, much like a person walking up a flight of stairs with a yo-yo. You're going to see things going up and down. For most people, timing the market does not work. So even though you've got mutual funds available, you still have the potential of a huge loss as well as the large gains. So investment returns are not equal to the investor's availability of money, because often the amount of time that you want to invest is not equal to what you need. If you are actually looking at the biggest problem here, I guess, is really saying the problem with choosing an investment is don't choose a short-term investment strategy for a long-range goal, and don't choose a long-range strategy for a short-term goal. That's been the biggest problem in most of our investments in the past.
What would that look like?
Well, basically, if you're doing something that you need cash in the next couple of years, you don't want to pick something that's going to be a long-term strategy. You know, like just getting a life insurance policy that has nothing until you die. That would be a bad strategy, is to put your money just there. A good strategy would be putting something into, say, an annuity if you need to be able to get money out relatively quickly. The problem with some of the annuities is that there is the cost on, if you try to take money out before age 59 and a half, you will see some kind of penalties. It's similar to IRA type of accounts from that perspective. So when you want to put something in that's going to look a little bit better, let's see, I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to approach this. If I was taking $500,000 and putting it into an insurance contract and I put in a maximum fund, in other words, I put more lump sum money in at the beginning, and I start pulling out $50,000 a year that earns 10%,
yeah,
like I was earning that on an annuity, that $50,000, which is the 10%, is available to me tax-free from a life insurance policy. And it's tax-free for the first 10 years because you're withdrawing your original principal. After you use up your principal, then you don't continue to withdraw the interest because that's going to now cause you to go into the wrong kind of a category. You have to switch it over and start using it as a loan against the policy instead of doing it as a withdrawal. So that's one of the differences when you look at an insurance contract as compared to an annuity. Because the annuity you take from the end, you're taking interest and you're paying tax as you go. On an insurance policy, you're taking out principal and then working against the buildup of it. So we want to actually build more in our accounts and start taking it out tax-free, not taxable. So it's tax-free if you are withdrawing. You really have to lump sum and do a maximum funding of an insurance contract. That's a whole new approach. Most people look at traditional life insurance as buying a bunch of life insurance for the least premium, and then what you're really doing is buying death insurance. And the strategy we're trying to get people to see is that do the opposite. You buy the least amount of insurance that the IRS lets you get away with and put the most premium into your policy. It loads it full of cash, so it now has the chance to really compound fast, and it turns into a cash cow. And as long as you pull the money out in the right strategy, pull it out where you're using the principal initially in your retirement years, say, and then you convert it over into a loan, or in some cases there are companies within the insurance contract that actually let you take the money out by doing a loan against your policy as collateral, but it doesn't actually touch your life insurance policy. So it continues to grow. They charge you a small amount in interest for taking out that loan.
So you never decrease the principal.
But they actually pay you still on your regular principal. So you're still earning the interest of the policy. So a lot of them are doing it where it's considered a wash loan, the same charge out as the same charge as you're earning. So it's just leaving it alone, and it's not hurting it any. There are companies that are available that charge you even less to borrow than what they're paying you. That's back to our arbitrage. It's cool. You build up enough equity in your insurance contract that you can take money out, and they pay you more than what you're earning if you left it in there by itself.
Wow.
So you could be investing again, like you do on your house, taking money and investing at a higher rate of return. So the whole thing is creating the right kind of strategies and following within the Internal Revenue Code laws. There's a number of provisions. We follow all the different types, Section 72E, 220006, and 264. They all give us guidelines on how we can and can't take money out and invest it within the proceeds of insurance policies. But it's really great. You're able to do a savings account with an insurance company. Insurance companies are one of the safest investments that's available to us because, I mean, they really are running the country. And there's a couple of ways you can do this. I mean, you can get to your money.
You have like 30 seconds.
Okay, you can go at it from the smart way or the dumb way or the sad way. You can get it from dying, or you can get it by taking it out the right way and making sure it's part of your strategy. And just to close this down, would you rather have a stable rate of return, especially as you approach your retirement, and have this tax-free, or do you want it volatile returns and have it taxable? Obviously, it's better to take it out tax-free and get a nice return on it, because even after taxes, it's going to come out a lot better if you have something that's stable and tax-free.
Debbie, thank you very much. We need to continue this conversation next week for sure.
Oh, we will.
I'm sure the diva has put her bow on and she's ready to go. And diva, what are you going to bring us this week? This is Maureen O'Crean, and no show is complete without a resident diva.
Ah, yes. Thank you.
Well, but you know, honor the diva, you're in big trouble, right?
That's right. We all must honor our diva and our divos. Well, this is Maureen O'Crean for Distinctively Diva. We are a community of women for women, so please visit us at distinctivelydiva.com. And today we're going to talk about a distinctively diva ritual for the holidays, the art of self-gifting. As a single parent for over 20 years, Maureen's stack of presents underneath the Christmas tree always looked a little like I lived Scrooge's life. Sparse indeed. After the first few years of no presents at all, I decided this would not do, so I began to pick up and wrap a new mystery novel every year, some warm socks, and something for my stocking. The consciousness I held was that it wasn't that important. The kids were having a great Christmas, and that made me happy. And while that was true, and I have very little desires for material goods, I discovered a fundamental truth. I love presents. I love to give presents. I love to receive presents. I love the wrappings and the surprise and the wonder of gifts. We all do. And there is nothing wrong with gifting ourselves.
Nothing.
Nothing. So this year, we're creating a new diva tradition, the 12 Days of Divamus. And here are some suggestions. Here are some suggestions for gifts that will tickle you pink and make
I'm pink.
And make you feel very special all year long. So the first one is padded hangers. These are a luxurious item that will alter a woman's relationship with her closet. You deserve them. Check out the 99-cent stores, eBay, on the Internet, and pick yourself up a set. Every woman needs a bath pillow for those long soaks in the tub. She also needs a great soft bathrobe. Heavy Cotton Terry or Target has some wonderful soft pink robes in diva colors. We all need diva PJs in silk or satin. They're available in all sizes and at all price levels. Get something pretty just for yourself. We also need warm, comfy slippers that will match your robe. A feather mattress and a down pillow so you can sleep on a cloud. A warm fleece throw to snuggle into when you rest. A fountain pen and note cards that are only yours. Pick up a pack with your first name initial. Take a beautiful photo of yourself. Have a party, make yourself up with some friends. Have someone be the hairstylist and the photographer. Frame it and hang it where you can see it. Pick up a favorite essential oil to instantly lift your spirits. Orange, lavender, or rose will calm you and fill your spirit. Create an altar or a shelf for you in your closet Collect the items that mean the most to you and let them greet you every morning. Make it beautiful. And take a day off from work and family to be in the season, this season, and experience the beauty and joy of the moment. So this is your year, Diva. Among your celebrations of Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Hindu festival of Diwali, La Navidad, the Muslim end of Ramadan or Bodhi Day, remember to celebrate yourself, Diva, the light of the divine, a shining star among us.
This program has been produced by Editors On Air Now. Our radio partner is ConeyandCompany.com. Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam. Our executive producer, Nathan Jett, our associate producer, and thanks to Dean Houston and Patty Cota Robles today, and our chief technical officer, Pete Laubach, and thanks to the team at Voice America, and that means you too, Ruben. Love you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on VoiceAmerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at HeavenIncorporated.com.